Lunch with Pippa Hudson
on Cape Talk.
Join the conversation.
Well, let's take a deep breath and step into the garden for a couple of minutes, shall we? Because for those who are lucky enough to have gardens, lockdown presents a perfect opportunity to spend some time in them and to see to all the weeds that need pulling and the hedges that need trimming. I've asked Kirstenbosch horticulturist Charisse Viljoen to join us today to give us some suggestions on which tasks could be completed in this period. Today is the last day to get to a nursery if you are needing to stock up on fertilizers and other plants. So if you've got a question, dial in now, please, on 021-446-0567 or leave a voice note on 072-567-1567. Charisse is, of course, the nursery manager at Kirstenbosch Botanical Gardens. Charisse, lovely to have you with us. Welcome.
It's great to be here, Papa. I'm so excited about the gardening potential the next 21 days.
You're the one person who's got the positive outlook. Charisse, before we dive into our gardens, Kirstenbosch will have to close, of course. Do you just shut the gates and leave the garden to its own devices? How do you prepare for lockdown?
It's been quite hectic. We don't have any protocol around this. We do have skeleton staff that water every weekend. So we have shut the gates. We've been asked to close today already. And luckily, we have quite a few people who live on the property to be able to take care of the collections.
Okay.
We have lots of threatened plants and very precious collections, never mind just the garden displays, but in our nurseries. And so our core, about 11, 12 people on the property who stay here, whether they're waterers or not, they've been pulled in to do watering and pruning. I've been giving them quick tutorials, and they're all very, you know, on board and excited, and we're going to be okay.
And of course, for them, they are the few people in Cape Town who will have the luxury of being able to have a decent jog to their heart's content because they've got the whole of the garden to explore, Charisse.
We have, although I think our boss was feeling a bit mean when he said, and no running around the garden, work only.
Okay, all right, they're listening hard. Okay, so that's good to know. So when this is all behind us, Kirstenbosch will be there in full bloom and ready to receive visitors again, wherever that may be. Okay, let's talk about what we can do in the meantime. For those who do have time on their hands at home, Charisse, it's a great opportunity to get some proper prep done for winter. What should that look like?
Pippa, there is so much to do, but first I'm going to prick all the listeners' consciousnesses,
okay,
because they all know that they haven't emptied out their worm farm bins, if they have them, for months, for years, possibly since they first owned them. It's something that people are quite reluctant to do. The whole system works and you don't quite know how to unpack it all, but that's what you do. You literally unpack the layers, you drain off all the juice, which they're usually quite comfortable doing, and then you throw it out onto a table, preferably with some newspaper or some black plastic on, and then you leave it in a heap. And the amazing thing about the worms that live in the worm bins is they will head towards the middle because they don't like the sunlight. And then you scrape it off. If you can picture scraping a sand dune sides down until you see red little worms again, then you wait and they'll head back into the middle again until you have a core pile with your worm casts again that you put back in your rejuvenated worm farm bin.
Okay.
And also their compost bins. They haven't emptied out the bottom of their compost bins throughout summer. It's been too hot, too much of a chore. Then to get in there and dig out that bottom compost, you can't go to the nursery and buy now. Maybe you've been able to stock up, but it's time to get into your compost bins, both worm farms and the ones you keep at home.
Okay, so maintenance on the worm farm, maintenance on the compost bins. Anything we should be doing for our lawns at the moment, those who still have lawns that survived the drought?
I would say that since you are home to feed it and to mow it, do that. Because, you know, fertilizer creates growth and then you have to mow. Well, your husband has nothing else to do. So feed your lawn luxuriously. There's cooler weather, and so the growth will be slightly slower, and you'll be hardening up your lawn for any winter stress that it might suffer, and the fact that you and your kids and your dogs are going to be running all over it, because there's no place else to play and run. So good feed of the lawn, a good spiking, so that you just dig in the spade. You kind of throw it in like a javelin, rock it a bit, pick it out, throw it in. You're just trying to get these lovely air holes into any compacted lawn spaces. And it's actually a really good idea to go dig out your storage area that you keep all your old gardening stuff in. You will have an old bag of fertilizer, leftover bags of soil and crawl manure you've forgotten about. Have a good spring clean and throw everything on the garden. I'm not saying over-fertilize and go wild, but if you have something, use it up. Now's the time.
Okay, we've got a couple of voice notes that have come in for you already. So let's go to the first of those.
Hi, it's Derek here. I recently got a whole lot of cycad seeds, and I've had them sort of warmed up and underground and half underground for a long time now. None of them have come up. Is there a faster way of getting them to, I don't know, sprout? Thanks.
No. They're dinosaur plants for a reason. They are really, really slow. So you just need to take your time. They need to half lie in the soil. You don't completely bury them. And it's really a matter of patience. They do things in their own time, and there's not much you can do. If you've got them in a very cold area, try and make it a bit warmer, but not direct sunlight. Don't overwater, but that's about it. Patience is the name of the game.
Okay, good luck, Derek, and you have time on your hands, so make the most of it in your garden. Charisse, is it a good time to be trimming back shrubs and the like? Isn't this the time of year when we're supposed to do that?
Absolutely. You know, deadheading, which is where you take off dead flowers, is quite a time-consuming thing, because you don't just mass prune the plant. So besides actual pruning of your hedges and pruning back anything that's finished flowering, you can just walk around and pick off any spent flowers. And what that often encourages is a whole second flush of flowering coming through in the garden, which you'll be there to enjoy. And you know, Pippa, it's a great time to sow seeds.
Okay.
Really, and your sweet peas, do your sweet peas now. Remember, you've got to soak your sweet pea seeds in warm water overnight, and then you sow them the next day. Around Easter is when you're supposed to do it, and most people forget to. Now you can get on with it.
Okay, good reminder. Weeds, always a menace in the garden. It's a good time to spend some time paying attention and weeding. Anything else we should be looking to try and get out of the garden at this point?
I think it's a really good time. And also, Pippa, you know, you said to me, what can one do if you can't get to the nursery?
Yeah.
So division is another thing we tend to put off, you know, things that have gotten really crowded. And transplanting you can do now, because you're home to water something you've transplanted every day. I'm hoping people are still using their grey water to do this.
Mm-hmm.
So you can move plants that you were waiting to move. You can dig up very thick, overgrown old clumps and split them into two or four and then replant them. It's really time to sit back in your garden, feet up, cup of tea in hand, and contemplate what you would like to move and what isn't actually thriving where you wanted it to grow. Maybe it's time to move it now.
Okay, thanks. Let's go to the lines, because Ross has given us a call from Thornton. Afternoon, Ross.
Hey, afternoon. Yeah, I'm afraid I can't sit with a nice cup of tea and survey my garden, because so much is dying, and I'm wondering what I'm doing wrong. I'm using a lot of wastewater from the kitchen and the bathroom as well, and wondering whether perhaps the soap in that water is damaging things. Particularly suffering is my ground cover, which is a waxy leafed type of ground cover, and it doesn't seem to be having the energy it had last year.
Ross, you're absolutely right in that too much of a good thing, or a bad thing in this case, it does affect the plant. So the idea is always to water with the grey water, and then water with rainwater, or if you have borehole or pump water, but not just grey water in the same spot all the time. And the other thing I find we do is we generate a lot more grey water than we would use borehole water or municipal water. So sometimes it's overwatering that causes the problem. So you need to be absolutely sure you're not wetting too much, and that you're not only using grey water on the same spots or the same plants all the time. You're going to have to rinse in between with something else. But the rain will help you now with kind of rinsing the soap out. And the other thing you could do is introduce more compost into your soil, because the microbes in the compost help break down the soap factors in the grey water for much faster.
Great advice. Thank you so much. And Ross, I hope that helps restore your garden to good health. On the email, Jeanette would like to know whether hardy-dars do more harm than good to the lawn.
Well, not to the lawn. No, they really don't. They are in there. They're getting the crickets, the lawn caterpillars, everything that causes trouble. In fact, you know, you have what we would call pest problems in our lawns the minute your hardy dars are feasting on it. It's more when they start digging in your pots and in your garden beds and they really pull out everything as they pull their beak out again. But lawns, let them happily graze. They're ridding. It's a biological control of everything that would kill your lawn if the hardy dar wasn't eating it. And they're doing that aeration I spoke about before, leaving holes in the lawn.
Mm-hmm.
No problem with the hardy dars doing it there. Try to keep them out your flower pots.
Okay, thank you so much, Jeanette. Right, on the SMS line, somebody asking, is there a suitable green manure for a sandy fynbos garden?
Any kind of cuttings would be good. I'm always quite... what does she mean by green manure?
Mm.
Sometimes what that means is you actually plant a green ground cover that you're planning to... turn into the top of the soil, and sometimes it is that they want to put a green, fresh green mulch down. So if any kind of ground cover you can decide, as long as they're happy to grow in that soil, there's a variety of shady plants and thicktranthus that would grow that you can then just chop up into the soil. I'm wary of putting green mulch down because something that hasn't yet decomposed needs bacterial action and food, and the bacteria need nitrogen. So if you put anything green and not yet composted onto your soil, it actually depletes the nitrogen in the soil as the bacteria use the nitrogen to get the energy to break the items down, the green material down. So rather not. But if she really needed to, any kind of chippings off wood tend to do an okay job.
Okay, so some kind of wood chip. All right, thank you so much. I think we can squeeze in one or two more calls. You'll have to dial very fast though, please, on 021-446-0567 or pop a voice note through to 072-567-1567. Right, in the meantime, we'll go back to the SMSs. And somebody has, it's Mudge, I think, has red onions, which have been planted from seedlings, wants to know, do I separate the shoots from each other? And if so, how?
Oh, it's a very gentle job. So you would lift them up and you would separate them out. They actually will pull away from one another quite sweetly, but you can also leave a clump of three, which means you're not breaking the clumps apart quite as much. So either just lift them out of the seedling soil, separate them gently, and replant them as quickly as possible, either as singles or in clumps of three, and absolutely you can go ahead and do it, because you want space for that onion bulb to form nice and big. If they're too crowded, you just get spring onions.
Aha, okay. And lucky you to have red onions that are growing in your garden, which enjoy. I absolutely love them. Okay, somebody anonymous on the SMS line says, my succulents all seem to be shriveling. What can I do?
I would look for a pest. And the first thing always ask before even doing that is overwatering or underwatering. Dig your finger into the soil. See what's going on there. Is it too dry? Is it too wet? And either one of those you can then correct. Otherwise, have a look. And usually it's at night with a head torch. You'll find the little monsters munching on your plants or causing trouble or sucking sap, or early morning. And then you could use any kind of home remedy. Garlic and tobacco do quite well, or sunlight soap and chili. You know, there are lots of things that you can make a sauce out of that you can apply to your plant to kill the pest. But definitely observation and having a much closer look will probably yield the answer.
Okay, thank you so much. Charisse, we're going to wrap it up there. Thank you so much for the advice you've shared with us this afternoon. And let's hope those who do have the luxury of time at home and the luxury of a garden will be able to join those two together in happy harmony and make the most of this opportunity. Thanks so much for joining us, and you keep well, please.
Thanks, Papa. Stay safe, everyone.
You too. Charisse Ville, your nursery manager at Kirsten Bosch Botanical Gardens.